And welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. Happy Good Friday. Blessed Good Friday. Blessed Easter ahead of you. I think Easter is spiritually, hands down, the most profound day, period. It's also the most profound of the Christian faith. But the holiday of Easter, holiday, celebration, worship, whatever you want to call it, is the most profound day on earth because of the impact that Jesus Christ has had on this globe in so many ways. The building up to the eventual creation of the United States, even the resumption, the resurrection, if you will, of Israel was driven. There has been a resounding press to eventually reunite Israel in its land going way back. We hear back about the Crusades, you know, starting in like 1100 AD. I don't have the dates exact, but I know it's 1000 and change AD and up. They were basically formed or motivated, driven by Saladin and the Islamic reign on earth. And so they fought and fought and fought because they read scripture, or at least had it read to them, I suppose, back then. I don't know. But a lot of it maintained a Latin Vulgate, where the church had to translate to them or whatever. You know, they had their issues, I'm sure. But the Crusades in general, their primary purpose, believe it or not, was to resume the existence of Israel, especially Jerusalem. There were some heinous, crazy, hard battles fought over Israel. Some of the technology and medicine that Saladin had come up with when the Muslims ruled the world was astounding. People don't realize there was a time when Muslim ruled the earth. Not the best of times, especially not a great time for Jews or Christians, obviously. But because of Jesus Christ's death, burial, and resurrection on the cross, that's why the Crusades existed. That's why they fought to keep it and maintain it. You can go clear through history. You go all the way to the Christopher Columbus. Why was he driven? He was driven by the Church of England, the Queen of England, Jesus Christ, strong Christian. We're starting now to get all of this rewritten history, rubbish, trash, where we're trying to destroy all of our icons in history. It's terrible that I have to apologize. This is what they've done. They've attached really bad names to people in our past that have profound impacts on who we are and where we are and how we got here today. And, you know, they want to, I mean, I don't know if you've heard it all, but, you know, Columbus is racist and he was a slave driver and all this. Not true. I discussed on a show a while ago where he brought up, I think it was 900 and some African American or Southern Caribbean, I'm not sure the nationality there, down by St. Lucia North in that area. Basically what had happened is Christopher Columbus and his, what is it, the Pinta, the Nina, and the, you know, whatever they were, the ships, as they were heading their way down there, going island to island, they basically communicated accidentally to a large group of cannibals about, communicated about these other islands south of them that were filled with basically extremely pacifist residents, natives, and they knew these cannibals had already come and basically had lunch at one of the islands, and they were on their way south. And so Columbus talked to their leaders, however they did that, and made an agreement, said, look, you can either stay here or you're going to die. And apparently Christopher Columbus and his men had already battled with these cannibals, but they didn't have the ability to, you know, I guess eradicate them all. You'd have to read it yourself. It's definitely a true story. And he negotiated that. He said, the only way I can save you is to take you back to England as slaves. So they agreed. They did everything they could to take good care of them. There was like 900 and some. It started out, the original population was around 1,300, but the cannibals had already gotten to, I think, approximately 300 of them and some. But, you know, this is where they take stuff out of context. It's, if you study the history, you know, really what it boils down to, folks, is having a good attitude or a bad attitude, thinking the best or the worst. And I'll tell you, I struggle with this in my life and my relationships and friends and everything, is you can't think the worst. People, you know, if you think the direction life goes when we think the worst, and so many people do it and don't realize they do it, and they'll read self-help books and positive mental attitude and, you know, and then they're just constantly thinking the worst. How do you know if someone thinks the worst? I mean, I don't have a list here, but, you know, they quit easy. I mean, I've seen that in various things in life, and I've been there. We've all been there. You, what happens? You have a battle in your mind. You create these monsters. Look what's going on in our world right now. Where do you think fear comes from? Thinking the worst. I mean, think about that. It's thinking the worst. That's what's causing it. You're thinking the absolute worst case scenario. And we, I am sorry to say, I think we've perfected that under, you know, the current situation, if you will. But like I said, I'll touch on that and go back to this. But basically, the impact of Jesus Christ is immeasurable. He changed hearts. He changed minds. He taught us about love. He gave us a grounding. You know, even though there's lots of families that grow up in non-Christian churches, you know, Catholics and Lutherans, and I'm not saying they're all that way, but they are. A lot of them are just, they've been around for centuries and centuries, and they just kind of fall into line, and people go there, and you never know they're a, quote, Christian until you back them into a corner. You know, and but still, it has that impact on the United States, which has that impact on the world. It had the impact on England. Now, England got all bent out of shape because they abused the church, because power and religion do not belong together. And our founders knew that all too well. And then when we get into this separation of church and state, rubbish. And I say rubbish because it's misquoted and misapplied in a huge way. When we get into that stuff, I mean, we are absolutely taking it 100% the opposite of what was ever intended. We're doing exactly what we said we would never do. When we're coming in telling churches what to do, when to do it, where to do it, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, we do have the right to freedom of assembly. These governors that are calling this a national emergency and disaster and have a right to shut down churches and stuff, you know, I don't know. But everybody, you know, you get these scary pandemics, you get this scary, you get terrorism, and it's crazy. You go back in history and all these bailouts are based on fear and immediate urgency. It's got to be responded to right now. You don't have time to think. If you don't do this, they say it's going to destroy the world. Or it's, you know, literally. Let me see something here. I'm going to type something in that I have in my mind that came to, and then I'll get back to what I was saying. So, I wanted to get a list. I was trying to see if I can get a, I want to educate you folks, but that won't be, here we go. Maybe this will be it. So here's a historical list of Federal Reserve bailouts, perhaps. Not exactly what I was looking for, because those weren't Federal Reserve bailouts. But here's the thing. People don't realize that there's been like 22 Federal Reserve bailouts. The book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, is a great way to learn about that. Really, I don't know the name of the book. I don't like. People are, oh, that's weird. Well, you know, can't judge a book by the cover. But the thing is It's the best book. If you want to really understand, I mean, I had an extensive amount of postgraduate exposure, experience, and study in all kinds of economics, banking, finance, you know, you name it. But I never knew the truth. There were things that didn't make sense when I was studying the higher level economics. I was like, this stuff just doesn't make sense because our society doesn't work like this. It's kind of like people saying, you know, Kevin, the one thing that's just confusing me is I was always taught when stocks go up, gold goes down, and when gold goes up, stocks go down. Well, that's never been the case because what drives, well, gold, first of all, the word gold I use is an encapsulation of what I call, precious metals assets because it's a sector. Everything from numismatic coins, semi-numismatic, silver dollars, silver rounds, gold eagles, $20 gold pieces, all that stuff is one big sector. But it's bolted to the earth in stability over time. It's kind of like, I hate to even compare it. Well, it's an index, but it's not like the Dow where you have 30 stocks falsely representing 2 million plus, but it's all. So when I say gold, it's the shortest, simplest word to describe it all. But anyway, what affects the, we'll say, precious metals based assets market is inflation. Of course, supply and demand's huge, but that supply and there's a real supply and demand and an artificial supply and demand. When they created the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, they created the COMEX Act, the Commodities Exchange. What was the purpose of that? Well, the purpose was the ability to secure sale of certain commodities based on with futures. Okay, what do I mean by that? A farmer who's growing, you know, X amount of bushels of wheat a year, and he wants to lock his crop in at a certain price, and there's bids out, say at $5 a bushel or 50, whatever the heck. He locks it down, and he's got a futures contract that basically he's secured at that level. So he's hedging his wheat. That kind of stuff is why it was made. Well, they started to do it with precious metals. Why would you do it with precious metals? Well, a couple reasons. One, banks maybe were, you know, historically used to backing things with precious metals. Most of the time they all cheated and lied a lot, but they were doing it. So it was kind of like, okay, you want to secure your position in this, here's how you do it. Well, what's silly about that, when they created the COMEX, the precious metals prices were fixed, but the Fed knew hyperinflation was coming. The Fed also knew, the guys who wrote it up, Morgan and Aldrich and, you know, Kennedy's involved and all these people, when they wrote that thing up, they knew they had to create a system that would prevent people from going, you know what, you can have your new paper money. I'm going to just stick with my gold and silver. Great. No problem. Because gold and silver was fixed at a certain price per ounce by the United States government. It was immediately recognizable, liquid, 100%. The mint was actually issuing gold, silver coins. It was the most legitimate, firm, solid currency ever, you know. And the U.S. government had produced a lot of amazing, phenomenally awesome coins. That's why numismatic coins are incredible. First of all, everything was designed for circulation in our country, right? Primarily. I mean, there's proof coins that are old, but they're bucks. But we deal in them. But the thing is, they were designed to circulate. So when you find a really nice example that didn't, especially depending on the era, you know, it's a special thing. And their artwork and the quality is just amazing. And it's just really a special thing. And they've always been the number one collectible. And people are like, well, you know, how do you know down the road? You know, that's a good question. Obviously, people are always like, what about this? What about that? Well, first of all, you go to precious metals. Second chapter, Genesis, all the way through. God says this is money. He uses the strongest, most powerful descriptive word in Hebrew, taub, T-O-W-B, T-O-V-B, depending on where you want to write it. And he describes it as the greatest, the best. It's associated with health, wealth, you know, it's beneficial. He talks about investment and growth, and all these words are tied in. It's the most amazing word in the Bible. He uses the same word that he said that he saw his creation and saw that it was good. And then he goes in Genesis 2, gold is good, and used the word tab. And he basically pins it down. Then at that point, you got them going straight through history. Everybody's got precious metals as the primary form of liquid asset. It was like that before the flood, or before Christ, for at least 1,000 years. Well, it always was, but the coinage. We find coinage from, you know, over 1,000 B.C., you know, and so they've been doing it for a while. Actually, it goes back quite a bit more than that, but, you know, the world's been through this and been through that. So it goes through all history, you know, Solomon's Temple, we've, you know, and then we have glimpses throughout how it's all over heaven, okay? That right there should be all you need to say. Jesus comes to earth, he gets gold, frankincense, and myrrh, you know, and then you just go on. Sadly, Jesus gets his life sold for what? 12 pieces of silver or whatever, or 20. You know, it's interesting. Precious metals there. Real wealth. Jesus talks about you can't serve God and what? You were going to say money. Mammon. Totally different word. Jesus talks about gold and he talks about mammon. He talks about silver and he talks about mammon. Mammon means man-made money. It's the spirit of money. It's the spirit of I'm a self-made man. I work hard. It's the attitude that everything is answered by money. There are certain organizations that try to motivate people that way. Just everything's money, man. And they got the big leader who has pictures of his huge house on the lake and planes and boats. And he just tries to act like he's the happiest guy on earth. And if you are in his organization, you just listen to him and do what he says. You can be like him too. That is the spirit of mammon. You cannot serve God and mammon. You can't. It's he says you'll love the one and hate the other, or hate the one and love the other, whatever, right? It's obvious. So there's, so you can't get confused with the two. And Jesus tells them, you know, to take gold and silver, or when not to take it. And then he tells them to take their gold and silver and buy a knife at the end, which is interesting. But it's important to understand where it is. So it goes all the way through to the end. Three accounts in the Bible, we're chucking our gold and silver in the streets at the end on the day of wrath, but then it's in heaven. So here's what it boils down to. In fact, that really is important. It's all over heaven. It's mentioned throughout heaven, just over and over in different scriptural descriptions. If that's not enough for you, then the fact that it has been the pinnacle form of wealth since the beginning of written human history, period, biblically endorsed, authorized, divinely created, divine properties, precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, palladium, and rhodium, they all have supernatural properties. Silver, God created it for daily exchange. What happens with silver? Within 3 to 4 tenths of a second, silver kills all microorganisms upon contact. That's why people use colloidal silver. They can also become Smurfs if they use a lot of it. It makes them blue. Too much. But too much of anything's always bad. But it's good. I mean, people use it to clear up sinus infections and all kinds of sore throats. And I mean, it just kills. It kills bacteria, but it doesn't hurt you. So God made a daily form of exchange, a barterable material, fungible, the same everywhere all the time. Money has to be fungible. You can't have some special seashell that comes out of an area in Fiji, which they used to do. Because the rest of the world doesn't have that, can't recognize it, can't access it, doesn't know. Money has to be fungible. It's got to be the same everywhere you go. You melt gold, silver, platinum, palladium down, it's the same. Silver kills all microorganisms. Now, the strong, strong man-made ones, it might take a second or two, I think, or whatever I've read. It doesn't matter. It works. Gold, completely immune to the second law of thermodynamics. There's no naturally occurring substances on Earth that melt it or hurt it. It can sit in the ocean for 2 centuries and come out looking better than new. Platinum and palladium absolutely clean the air, clean all pollutants and contaminants out of the air. They make these little mesh screens, even for the gas masks for the special operators, etc. in the military. They just have these alternating screens of platinum and palladium and wires, and boom, the air goes through, sucks all the bad stuff out, and you're breathing clean air, even though you can see light through it. What? Yeah, crazy. That's why they're in carburetors and catalytic converters, all high-speed, high-heat electronics. And then, of course, rhodium is one metal. It's really bizarre. It adheres to just about every – well, it does. It adheres to every metallic element on the chart. And if you know anything about alloying and molecular structure, that's technically impossible. Gold's also infinitely divisible. So God made them with special properties. He used them all over. I was reading the other night about Abram because I was going back reading through the pseudo Book of Jasher on sacred texts and comparing to the Bible. And it says early on, and God blessed Abram with gold, silver, and lots of livestock. Pretty interesting. I mean, that's what it is. So I've had people ask that question, how do you know? Well, how do you know anything? Why would you be more comfortable putting your money in paper somewhere at the end of the rope with someone you don't even know? You really don't even know where your money is. I mean, you explain to me. I might be able to understand it. I do. But explain to me what happens to your money when you buy a 401k and you have stock. Where's your money go? Where's it go? I mean, you get a piece of paper that says you own stock, but it's a piece of paper. So did they take all your money? I mean, okay, so if you paid $200 a share for that piece of paper that you really never can hold in your hand, you just get emails about it. Where's the money? Where's the money when you want it out? Think about it. How do you cash out? I mean, if people start to liquidate their stocks, is all that money sitting in one big account? If it is sitting in one big account, then how can it help the companies that you're buying stock in? What happens when it goes up? Where's the money coming from? You got to think about all these things. Because if I told you the truth about all of it, you'd be out yesterday. The money doesn't exist. The money goes. First of all, it gets, you know, everyone takes their cut. Then it goes into the company. The money sits in the corporate coffers. It you know, and some companies like Apple, they have mega cash. And some companies do not. They do expansions, stock buybacks. Stock buybacks is when the market crashes and the CEO has a ton of dough burning a hole in his pocket and he buys his own stock back at a bargain price, which he happens to control the stock, and he can drive it back up, etc. But, you know, that's where your money is. Now, is it better to have that or have a physical asset that's been recognized since the beginning of history in your pocket or in your home, in your vault, in your safe or whatever? It's pretty obvious. So don't, you know, we get caught up in this Federal Reserve System way of thinking. I run into this a lot. I run into it a lot with spouses asking about spouses. Well, my brother or my husband or my wife thinks this or that. And it's like, you know, they got to look deeper. Get the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. You can read every chapter has an intro and a summary. And he says at the front, read it that way first. You can get through it. He says an hour. I always say two, but whatever. Read it. If you got someone who's really ignorantly opposed, but they won't educate themselves. I run into that a lot with information people ask for and they won't read it. I talked to a good friend the other night who's actually, you know, he's got his head on straight. Sent him some reading information, asked if he read it. He goes, well, I started, but I quit because I didn't really want to believe it. I'm like, yeah, baby, there's a seek in the truth. I mean, he's a great guy. He gets it. I don't know exactly what he's thinking, but, you know, we tend to do that as humans. We want to avoid the truth when it's really inconvenient, but we shouldn't, should we? The truth is a concept. Realize these are concepts. And I, you know, this is so critical to understand. People get mad and testy, and you can tell a lot about people. I think the closer they are to people that they're close to, there's a really nice description. But anyway, you know, family and things like that, I think that's the strongest determinant of heart condition because we can all go out and be phony. I mean, I've been in account exec and regional manager positions and sales positions where, you know, my job's to go out and look amazing, make companies that I'm soliciting think that the company I work for is the greatest, awesome family in the world. I always tried to build that culture around me. I always tried to be a cheerleader. I wanted to be positive, but I was young and stupid, and I had a big mouth. I mean, frankly, I was always real candid. Some people are very soft and sensitive about that, which I think it's important that we really all learn how to accept people the way they are and to learn how to look through the messenger and just derive the message. You know, when we start to say, oh, you're talking too loud, you're talking too quiet, although talking too quiet can be annoying and so can loud. I had a boss one time that he would whisper, he'd start talking, and just he'd get everyone around his desk and he'd just start talking really quiet, and then, you know, and everybody be leaning forward, leaning forward, leaning forward. It was a control thing. And finally, I was the assistant manager, and finally I told the people, quit doing this. He gets us all sucked in, leaning over. I mean, it was so annoying. And he'd lean back and talk quiet. And I told him, I said, just kick back in your chair. And when he talks quiet, just sit there and look at him until he says something and then say, I can't hear you. And we did it over and over again. And guess what? He quit doing it. And it was hard for him to quit. It's a control thing. People do that. So just so you know, just beware. People do weird stuff. People learn some crazy crap. And we grow up in environments. If you come from a dysfunctional environment, your family has got, they develop, you know, I remember years ago, there's this, you know, how to fight fair, 25 ways, you know, it's kind of like the what not to do. It's crazy. Some people have all 25 perfected. It's like they got three PhDs in destroying relationships, but they didn't even have to go to school to get it. What a valuable asset that is. No. So anyway, listen to the messenger, go through the messenger to get to the message. That is the best listening skill. Hear people's hearts. Don't worry about how they say it, what they said it, when they said it. You know, that's all diversion. I mean, there is times that they'll do it as diversion. If you're talking about something important, there's people that always want to take you off course or run away and all that. I mean, I get all of that. But it's so important that as listeners, we learn how to get right through. Listen to people. Just hear what they say. You can do it. And it propels everybody to a much higher level. So I think I want to touch on a couple things here. One would be this, you know, kind of my whole opinion. This is kind of, I'm not the most politically correct person around. You may have figured that out by now. The wheels are coming off the cart on this thing. We do not understand the economic impact. And I know the argument. Well, what should have we done? Well, you know, this is honestly, I know, I'm just going to, it's been overhyped. It's totally devastating our economy. It's a, you know how the weapon of mass destruction that got us into Iraq that didn't exist? This is the weapon of mass hysteria that does exist, that is taking us down hard. And you go back to like the collapse of the trade towers in 01 and, you know, kind of the mystery Babylon. You can go through Revelation 17 and 18 and it's like, that's it for positive. And then it kind of goes into this lull where we roll into the end times. That's the beginning of the end. And then we start to see the unraveling. And then we go back, you know, to the chronology of the bowls and the plagues and whatnot. And it's just like we start to see things kind of unravel and release. And then, you know, and God's on a different time schedule than we are. He's a generational God. He's not a minute by minute. He is a minute by minute God, but he's living the big picture a little bit, you think? And we've got ourselves, you know, in this prophetic kind of end times time. We're getting exercised in every possible way. It's unbelievable. And the economic stuff, you think of the impact, you know, it says the world became rich from her luxuries and sensuality, it says in about Mystery Babylon. And then the whole globe operates off of our Federal Reserve fiat currency. Okay. When plagues hit your land, what's the Bible say? You know, God says he can protect us from plagues or he can let them wipe us out. He can do that on a national scale and an individual scale. Obviously, on national scales, you know, he takes down places like Sodom and Gomorrah, which is another profound thing. The whole Dead Sea is just this salt-infested mess. You know, they've got pictures of brimstone, you know, all over the ground, big yellow fireballs, you know, that came down at the time. God can take out entire areas or he can take out individual people. And this coronavirus has its issues. I mean, it definitely, you hear these horrific illnesses and people getting so sick. later on, the statistics change. I want to tell you, again, being a numbers guy, a mathematician, a statistician, you know, that's just my whole background. Every one of these, I remember when the trade towers went down. You know what the first estimate of deaths was? 85,000 people. Then it went to 65,000. Then it went down to, you know, I remember 45,000, 35,000, 25,000. They were locked and loaded at that for a couple days. And then they dropped to 6,800. And, you know, and then when it was all said and done, I don't remember the exact numbers. But the point is this. They seem to always estimate high. And when it all comes down, it's going to be better than they predicted. I'll cover that here. I'll go over some numbers. But so we got the weapons of mass hysteria, I call it. It's actually taking control of our nation. I mean, let's face it. Wow, right? I mean, I had a construction project underway. I've got a business to run. Obviously not. The business isn't doing overly well. You know, there's people still picking up metals here and there, difficult to get, decent premiums on them. We're taking good care of our people and a good care of our customers, but I'm not applying for any of these loans that I could get money, free money from the government. I just haven't done that. That's not my thing. I just pray to God. He's got the best PPP, payroll protection plan, you know. And I'm sure there's people out there that think it's awesome because they can get unemployment. I'll tell you one thing to worry about right now, just to keep in your mind. When you're getting this unemployment right now and you're getting that they added on that, what is it? Oh, standby pay. You're not building up credits, work hour credits for next year's unemployment. So all these people that think they're kicking back and doing great, it's kind of like when they had, when Obama made an unemployment last 99 weeks. It just, you know, eventually it sucks the life out of everybody. And so just be aware of that. Be aware. If you're on the unemployment thing, just know you want to go back to work. If you're making more money unemployed than you were employed, then that's a problem. You either need a new job or you need to save some of that money or something. I don't know. So anyway, it's got the wheels coming off. It's mass hysteria. I think we've lost, well, we have lost control of our nation for sure. President Trump. I heard him today talking about he wants to lift this ban like right now by Easter. He said staying home can kill you too, you know, and he's smart. I mean, he's feeling it. The guy's getting so the guy always was sharp, but he entered a new game and you watch him talk now and he knows what to say and what not to say and when to say it better. Obviously, there's people that will disagree. He's getting a lot sharper. He's getting a lot better. And he knows what he wants. And he knows what's going on. And he knows that where probably knows where he's being played and where he's not. He had to take the extra cautious approach. But he wants this over. He knows this is an absolute economic suicide. He's a money guy. Praise the Lord that he's in office. Can you imagine the Hillary Clintons of the world, folks? There is no doubt that all of, you know, the whole Trump thing was absolutely divinely inspired. Bible says that clearly. God raises up kings and takes them down. And, you know, no one gets into that position of power without God's finger stamp. For, you know, there's a difference between the president we need and the president we deserve. I think, first, Obama was the president we deserved. Trump's the president we need. Why would we love the president we deserve and hate the president we need? Trump's ratings are the highest they've been, even though they're 49%. That's how partisan we are. It's pretty pathetic. So the outlook on this coronavirus, as I've been watching the numbers, it has changed for the better in the past few weeks. And I propose we need to get our lives back. There's so many people unemployed. They were saying $1.3 trillion a day in lost gross revenue globally. With the GWP sitting at $80 trillion, you know, figure it out. That's 60 days. That does not take into account loss of asset value. What do I mean by that? Well, your house is going to drop in price. Your car is going to drop in price. Your collectibles may or may not. They may be a good escape, hopefully, let's hope. But in general, you know that your investments and savings have dropped in price. So that's additional lost revenue that's unaccounted for. This is a big thing. Recovery is going to be ugly, clear through the end of the year. I would say precious metals, folks. I will admit, people have, you know, I haven't been pushing it that hard because it's not that easy to get a hold of. We've got a decent inventory now. The premiums are strong, but I definitely would make that move. Oh, by the way, I had said this at the end of my last show. This is really important to know. They passed a law that you can do early withdrawal on your 401k during this COVID thing only. I don't know when it will end, but it's part of this stimulus. Let's see if I can find it. And without penalties, right? So here's how it works. I want to double check one tax aspect of it because I'm not an accountant. Okay, so here's what it does. COVID-19. The CARES Act enables people to take early retirement distributions without paying the usual 10% penalty. And so it gets even better than that. So if you're under 59 and a half and you've been wanting to take it out, and I've heard this over and over, I tell people, don't do it. You got that penalty, don't do it. If it's a small amount of money, 25, 40 grand or something, there's a lot of things we can work around. People get into the well up into the six figures, and it gets, you got to be really careful. It's their retirement. You want to take really good care of it. You got to be smart. You don't want to waste money. So basically what happened is you got Trump giving away all this money, expanding unemployment insurance, and then you got Congress coming out. So they say the relief bill waives penalties on up to $100,000 of retirement plan distributions. That's taking it out before you're 59 and a half. What's even better is that they then split up the revenue over 3 years. Okay, that's awesome. You take out $100,000, or just say hypothetical, we use that number because that's the cap. You don't owe the penalty, but then each year you carry forward $33,000 a year. This is beautiful. Why, Kevin? Because we have a communistic, socialistic, progressive income tax system. What does that mean? That means that the more money you make, the more you report on your taxes, the higher the percentage of the tax. So the tax rate on $100,000 is far more than the tax rate on $33,000. They break it into thirds. So you got 3 years to pay the tax. To me, this is a dream. Here's the way to do it. Take out your 100 grand, get metals, get whatever, get precious metals, we'll build a portfolio. Then you have, first of all, you're going to owe the income tax, but folks, you're going to owe it anyway. It's tax deferred. You're not getting away with anything. You think you're going to leave it in there till you die, your offspring's going to pay it. And then they're going to pay it at what rate? We've got so much. What's going to happen after this stuff? Okay, we'll have Trump in there. Yeah, but what about on a state level? Oh, our state's bankrupt. What do? We have to jack up the estate tax. I've already heard this. I've heard this twice since this started. Washington wants to ram the estate tax up. Why? It's invisible. No one knows. No one feels it right now. And it's huge when they start whacking 50% of your income or your net worth for life. They guarantee, that is how you guarantee the destruction and forward moving estate family thing at all. It's terrible. So that's one thing. It's eventually going to get hit hard. There are states where if you leave money in a 401k, and Washington's one of them, you are subject, if someone passes, not just to the full throttle income tax on the entire balance on the date of basis, which is the date of death, you also owe estate tax. You take it out before that, you don't. But if you take it out before that, before you're 59 and a half, you owe the feds a 10% penalty, and then you realize all those taxes right then and there. So this year is how you do it. You take the taxes out, or you take the income out now at 100 G's up to, And then it depends. If you have like 25, 30 grand with no penalty right now, I would look strongly getting it out. Just have the taxes due. They're going to be due next year. So here's what's happened. You have 12 months. Well, in other words, you have till the next tax cycle, tax season, to pay the taxes on this stuff, right? So we're into April. That means you have about 12 months. Trump pushed taxes forward, I think, to June, then July. So we're probably going to have some kind of soft phase out of that, because if people are doing their taxes in July and again in April, I don't know what that's going to lead to. But we'll just assume everything goes back to normal. So you take it out now. You are going to owe an income tax. Again, you're going to owe it anyway. I've told people in the past, if you have, you know, you're making your contributions to this 401k all the time. Say you're making $50,000 a year and you're putting in 6% or 10, 11. I got a friend who's doing 15%. Say you're doing 10%. Well, you're doing 5,000 bucks a year on your 50 grand and say your wife's making 38 or whatever. I'm just throwing numbers out there. See, now you got 85, 90 grand coming in. You've got a tax rate that's probably sitting at about the 15% rate at that point in time that you've saved on, okay? What I was saying in the past is if you took out the 100, you're going to push yourself up a little bit. You might be up to 17% instead of 15, just on that toppy part. Now they've brought it down. So if you look at the fact this coming year, you have low income or less or whatever, throwing that in is not going to hurt you a bit. They're waiving all the tax penalties, and then you take it. So instead of paying tax on 100 grand, which progressively near the top, you get into higher rate brackets, you pay it on 33 grand each year, you're fine. So what I would do is build a portfolio, and then next year when the tax is due on the first 33, take a look at it. See where we're at. What do we got? Grab something that's in profit. Boom. Pull it out. Cash it out to pay the tax. The tax on 33 grand, it's going to be nothing. You know, in fact, on Trump's tax plan, you get such a, exemption level at up to, what, $50,000, $60,000 for married filing jointly before you even start paying taxes. That's not exactly right, but it's close. But anyway. So you take that out and then you just pay the taxes as you go. You say, well, I could just pay them all next year. No, you stretch it out. Take advantage of the government's money. It's the first time you might come out ahead. First time you owe them or, you know, that they don't owe you. I mean, if you prepay your taxes, they love it. But if you underpay, if you're me and you're self-employed, if you underpay more than 10%, you have a big nasty penalty. If you overpay, no matter how much you overpay, there's no rewards or benefits or interest, and you can't get the money back until tax time. Interesting how that works. So keep that in mind. They've waived the 10% penalty for early withdrawals of 401ks and IRAs. This is a rollout, taking the money out to live, per se. That's what the law is written for. If you don't need it, get precious metals. We're walking into some crazy times, folks. This stuff has only begun. They are literally, you are seeing the principality of the air literally attacking Donald J. Trump and his administration. Because, I mean, that's exactly what the devil is, isn't it? You know, the airwaves. We've got the airwaves. I looked that up the other day. It means atmosphere below the heavens. It's talking specifically about where we live, that Satan is the ruler of our domain, of the air we breathe, the air we circulate in or swim in. That's his domain. Interesting, isn't it? I think that's pretty profound, especially since everything now travels through the air. Everything's becoming wireless. We're going to be charging our phones soon wirelessly, aren't we? I mean, it's, they're there. Well, technically, they're already doing it. I've seen it. So anyway, let's get back to my old opinion here of whatever that's worth. So I was saying the outlook's changed to be better over the past few weeks. And we need to get back to work. We need to get back to life. It's not going to be the same. I know they've made that clear. They're going to impose all kinds of stuff on us. The time is now. I mean, we need to contact, you know, contact your governor and state legislators and ask them to end shutdown measures that are in force around us. Today's April 10th. I mean, he's got us locked down till May 4th minimum. We don't even, I mean, that's a long time. Yeah, that's another 24 days. You know, that's 3.5 weeks from Easter weekend. Good Friday. I mean, it's too long. You're crazy, Kevin. Okay, I am. But that doesn't make me wrong. So, you know, I would contact the governor, state legislators, have them end any shutdown measures that are in force as sooner than later. Anyway, so I've got some other information here I wanted to get to real quick. That's kind of a long batch of stuff that I don't think I'm going to necessarily have time to get to. So let's see here. Freedom is the cure. New American. I was looking at the New American magazine put out by the John Birch Society. Good company, or company, organization. Very conservative, very constitutional. It's run archaically. I've been associated with them for a long time, sometimes more than others, but it's been around a long time, and it is the old guard for sure, but boy, their writers are brilliant. The people are godly and awesome, and they love liberty and freedom, and it's called the John Birch Society. It's worth a look, I think. They do a nice job of covering things. So anyway, around, you know, we've got the response to this COVID-19 caused by SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus has been, the response has been to abandon our freedoms, to absolutely give up our civil rights, to shut down free markets and institute thoroughly socialist police states. And oh yeah, it's just for a time, you know, but there is no deadline on it. And then it's, what is it going to be, one thing after the next? I was afraid it might go to animals. And then they'd say it's affecting our food supply. You know, and then we get into this, you know, rationing, right? And then we've got lockdowns, curfews. Here's a gal, Sigal Sadetsky, the head of Israel's public health services, made reference to the Chinese approach to handling the coronavirus pandemic in remarks to the Knesset Subcommittee on Intelligence and Secret Services. She told them, the paper reported, quote, that she believes everyone will do the same thing. Question about whether she was advocating a lockdown or curfew, her answer was chilling. Quote, it says, a lockdown and personal monitoring of people and a total halt to personal freedom, she said. Says she may as well have been speaking for status everywhere, including in America and so on. This is our mentality. We are literally taking on. There's so much of this stuff, folks, and I don't know if you see it, but I do. You have to look past the fear. You have to understand that every bailout, as I was talking about earlier, is driven by panic and fear. We had stretched the economy thin. I have notes to the left of me I tripped over today from last summer. Frauds end suddenly. Summer of 2019. I said the bubble that's about to pop will cause far more destruction than any financial bubble in U.S. history, making the housing bubble of a decade ago look minor. You must understand the dead simple strategies that will save your retirement when stocks fall by 50 to 75% or more. Every major stock market boom is followed by a long, painfully destructive bear market. How long do you wait? These are notes to myself. And then I go on and I explain that they have to find an absolute chaotic catastrophe to take your eye off the ball. It's not anybody's fault that all your money got stolen. I remember the 2008-09 crash. People were like, brokers, I heard them saying, well, you know, we're all in this together. You're not alone. Well, that makes me feel good. You know, the Jews in the concentration camps weren't alone either. I don't think you need to be alone. I mean, I don't think you need to have unity while you're being systematically, you know, stripped of all your civil rights and whatever. And, you know, there's no historical example of any socialist economy ever succeeding during any catastrophe or public security risk or anything. They're the worst. Socialist regimented economies have been tried over and over and over over the last century plus. And every time they collapse and they crash, this is what we're doing now. We're pushing this stuff. And Trump's working within the guidelines, but you know, this system's so big and so powerful. And I hear people criticize him for this and that. Man, I would put you in that seat. I mean, you want to just sit there with a, you know, blowtorch on you constantly, you know, rubber bullets all day long. I mean, that's got to be just 1% of what it feels like. So he has been molded and maimed in a big way. He's had to just do this recuperative, you know, lick your wounds thing because they're pounding him so bad. They don't want him speaking the truth. People that get to see him behave right now, his ratings are going up. Boy, the media's freaking out. I was sitting there listening. Yeah, this is really good use of my brain, right? Listening to Rachel Maddow from MSDNC, MS Democratic National Committee. In other words, MSNBC, trash. Lies, bad, fake media. Going through this list of how all these things that happened under Obama and how great he was. I mean, just absolute propaganda. When I saw that, I was just like, ugh. I was on Facebook. Oops. Don't even remember why. Not a common place for me. Like, very rarely. Like, maybe every few months at the most. And some guy I went to high school with has this flaming radical left-wing post of just blah. So, of course, I started watching this stuff. And I'm just like, you know, they believe this garbage. It's an absolute lie. And I'm so statistical and evidentiary and analytical. I'm like, it's so obvious to me. And I want to say I listen to every side of the fence with pure skepticism. I don't try to bring in facts or statistics that just don't pan out and don't work. And if someone's speaking and their word's no good at any point, I'm done. I won't repeat their stuff to you. So I'm listening to this stuff and it is like, what's the purpose? She's got this 21 things that how great Obama was in the economy, just garbage. And then she's comparing Obama's unemployment to the unemployment before coronavirus. Like that has anything to do with him. They're so crazily bipartisan. There's just no way around this thing. I don't get it. I don't know what the proper... I'll tell you one thing. If my people who call by my name will humble themselves and pray, right? I will heal their nation. That's what God says. And it's important to understand that he's talking about the believers in a country. He's not talking about the non-believers. And it's interesting to understand that's how God judges a nation, by his people. So what we do as believers is what we get judged for. God doesn't expect non-believers to behave in a holy, godly, glorious way. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves, I think it's pray and seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, I'll hear from heaven and heal their land or their nation. So as people of God on Easter weekend, the days to celebrate the resurrection of our Savior, Jesus Christ, which is phenomenal, incredible, miraculous, amazing, scientifically relevant. How fortunate are we to have that? What an absolute gift. Can you imagine Earth without that? They say God is a man-made contraption that we do for control and all this filthy, vile stuff. Really? So we're here from nowhere. We're of no use, of no value, of nothing, of nothing. But evolution, I mean, that's the most supernatural. That would be the greatest miracle of all time. That would be so much more than Jesus raising from the dead after being absolutely killed. It's kind of like, you know, God made sure that it was like, now he's dead. Now, for sure, if we do that, he's dead. The Romans, I love people like, he wasn't really dead. Yeah, right. Those Romans were really bad at knowing if someone was dead or not. They were sick, sick puppies. God let the world get to the sickest point and the most powerful point and the most pinpoint point in history. You had every religion, every major world government, every single possible group was there. The Romans had perfected the sickest system of death imaginable. Everybody's just hovered in this tiny little place called Jerusalem. So that all the news and all the information and all the most powerful leaders and everybody congregate on one tiny spot, Golgotha. They all know who he is. They all know who he is. They all know what he does. They all know what he did. They knew what he stood for. And, you know, you've got soldiers that executed him standing there going, this truly was the Son of God. You've got old astronomical records from China from a time that fits the death of Christ, of the sun turning black, being eaten by the dragon, as they say, among other things. It's real, folks. It's the most relevant, recognized archaeological book in existence. Doesn't matter what an archaeologist believes. But just remember what he endured and the fact that, you know, there's weeping in the night and joy in the morning. And this is kind of what David was talking about, is the resurrection of Christ. So I talked a little more about what's going on financially and how I feel about stuff. I imagine that. Have a good Easter. Worship the Lord. Don't lose sight. Wish people blessed Easter. Remind them what the weekend is. Remind them what this is about. It's our worship of the Lord Jesus Christ's resurrection. Without it, we're nothing. Nothing. That's it. Bottom line, the rest of it is rubbish. It's filthy rags. So thank you for tuning in. Just have a godly, great, blessed Easter. Don't forget about us in your prayers. We need them. We're people too. So praise God and have a wonderful weekend. Thank you. Bye-bye.